Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to our favorite edition of the week, the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And Jim, what a difference 24 hours makes on our good martini. Yesterday it was the bad martini. And the story of Chen Guangcheng, he, of course, is the blind Chinese dissident, has been a strong critic of his government for years over its forced abortion, forced sterilization policies related to their one-child policy. He has two kids, which tells you that he's not exactly the favorite person in China of the communist government there. Yesterday, the bad martini was that it looked like the U.S. delegation there had basically given him lip service, sent him to a hospital, and told him good luck. But thanks to a lot of pressure from Chen himself, his supporters in China, human rights activists here, and, of course, us on the Three Martini Lunch yesterday, looks like the U.S. is taking this more seriously. And if the latest reports are accurate, it looks like Chen, his wife, and his two kids are going to be coming to the U.S. because he's been granted an academic fellowship somewhere here at a university. So it looks like the immediate danger for him and his wife, who is apparently being beaten in recent days, is seeing a pretty good conclusion here.
Yeah, it's worth noting this is a cautious and conditional good martini,
right?
Recognizing that until Chen and his family are on U.S. soil, I don't think you can necessarily feel all that safe. And I had said last night in a fit of cynicism that, look, when a Democrat is in the White House, if a communist regime wants you, you can be living in a house in Miami with your relatives and an administration will send you back, thinking of Elian Gonzalez.
Sure.
So knowing the reach of Chinese intelligence, et cetera, it's probably safe to assume that Chen Guangcheng will probably never really live all that freely or without the heavy hand of the Chinese state not too far from him. However, if it gets him out of the country, if it gets him in a circumstance where he can feel, because of his prominence, a certain level of safety and safety for his family, that's about as good a circumstance as we may be able to hope here. One of the things that's going to be worth reviewing in the coming days is how these negotiations went. And there's kind of a very intriguing post in the corner from Dan Blumenthal making the argument that, look, Washington wanted a nice, happy summit with the Chinese this week, and they really should have called it off with this going on. That in other words, this was kind of creating an artificial deadline for these negotiations, and if there was need to resolve this quickly, if you need this issue to go away, well, then gee whiz, you lose leverage. You know, often the person who blinks first loses in these circumstances, and this is one of those things where the U.S. needed to hold out for the best deal possible for Chen, and dealing with a person on the other side of the table who's not necessarily the most trustworthy foreign power out there. So again, this is a good, you know, relatively good result so far. We'll have to keep our eyes on this, but if it ends up with this may be about as good a solution as we could hope for in this, you know, complicated, tangled diplomatic mess.
Yes, and if they do get here safely, some modicum of credit goes to the administration, although it doesn't seem like that was their first instinct. But they, of course, claim that he didn't initially want to come here and so forth. So a lot of this needs to be fleshed out as time goes on. On to martini number two now, Jim, and it's unfortunately pretty much the same bad martini we had 2 days ago. And that's because the private sector job numbers for April are pretty much reflected in the overall job numbers for April, at 115,000 jobs created, well below expectations, which were around 160,000. The overall unemployment rate down to 8.1. And as the left-leaning news station here in town said, that's good news. No, it's not good news, because as we've established many, many times, you need a lot more than 115,000 jobs created in a month to force the unemployment rate down, which means the only other way that can happen, people stop looking for jobs. And that's exactly what happened.
Yeah, this is a pretty darn grim jobs report. It's going to be kind of fascinating to see how much emphasis there is to try to spin the top line number. But look, the reason the unemployment rate went down is that more Americans left the workforce. And what's really kind of astounding, and one of my, you know, guys just sent me an email saying, look, 550,000 Americans have left the workforce since January, allegedly during a recovery. Greg, what's happening out there? My common joke in these circumstances is alien abductions, or maybe they're all cruising to the Bermuda Triangle, but like, what's getting these Americans to just drop off the workforce? I mean, they can't all be retiring. They can't all be going to college. They can't all be going and joining the Peace Corps, or you know, what is going on that is getting these people to leave the workforce? Because no one leaves the workforce voluntarily unless they're retiring. You know, it's not good news for this. It'll be interesting. And the other kind of fun exercise of this morning was going back to the Bush years, finding comments from the likes of Nancy Pelosi and John Kerry bewailing unemployment rates of 4.4% and 5.6% and 6.0%, things that would look like nirvana compared to what we have now. We've said before, look, a tough economy is probably, you know, going to be the most strongest argument for Mitt Romney. You know, that's an extremely high price to pay. And I think it just kind of demonstrates that, look, this, you know, true economic growth really can't occur under this president and his policies.
That certainly seems to be the case. And then you have those out there like Congressman Duncan Hunter, who wants to change the overall unemployment rate to factor in the folks who have given up work. After the March numbers, he says that would have been 9.6%. And I have to think that if it's changed at all as a result of April, it's only ticked upwards. On to Martini number three now, Jim. And this was perhaps one of the most entertaining aspects of the conservative blogosphere in a long time yesterday. But at the heart of this is kind of a shocking admission, really, from the Obama administration. They sent out this web video with this fictional character, Julia. So fictional, she actually doesn't have eyes or a mouth. And basically, the explanation from slide to slide is how from age 4 to age 67, Julia's life is going to be happy because of Barack Obama's policies, from Head Start to college tuition to free contraceptives to entitlements and all sorts of other things along the way. Basically, this cradle to grave, Obamacare itself, of course, she can stay in her parents' coverage till she's 26, all this stuff that makes conservatives throw up. And really, I don't understand how Mitt Romney could come up with a better example of how Barack Obama's goal is for government to run every aspect of your life.
Yeah, I saw one or two folks on our side of the aisle who said, you know, this is kind of interesting. You know, it's both interesting in its use of graphics, and it's interesting in the it's telling a story. And a lot of people say that one of the great strengths in political communication is the ability to put things in very personal terms, in ways people can relate to, and telling a story. So in that sense, people might say, ah, you know, this is going to work. On the other hand, it was so ripe for mockery, because we all had the lines of, first of all, Julia was the name of the character in 1984, who was, you know, whose life was being run by Big Brother. And lo and behold, I mean, every little detail of her life, the Obama administration was there stepping in and taking care of her because she could never do it by herself. The important message to Julia is that she'd be nowhere without Barack Obama, and she should know it. All right, show some appreciation for Obama raising her up from the mud from which she came. Speaking of amalgamated characters coming out of nowhere, Julia gives birth to a child. Greg, I'm not surprised. There was no mention of the father or husband in that circumstance. And I'm sure that's not accidental, because Democrats, you know, poll very, very well among single women, much less well against married women. And a lot of people have argued one of the reasons for this partisan divide between women depending on their marital status is that for single women, single moms, women who are trying to get by with only, you know, without a husband or you know, partner in their life, government is that partner. Government steps into that role. And a lot of people say this is not the way it ought to be, and this is a very unhealthy circumstance. I felt like, you know, sitting down to Julia and saying, Julia, look, Barack does not love you. Barack, you know, he says he gives you all these things, but he's very controlling in your life. He wants to tell you what to do in all these things. Now, look, you know, Julia, Obamacare never took care of Julia's eyes. It never took care of her feet pointing in the opposite direction, little things like that. But one of the things that was kind of fascinating about this was Julia ends up becoming a graphic designer, a web graphic designer, which, by the way, it kind of says something that when you ask web graphic designers to come up with an everyman character, they come up with a web graphic designer. but she ends up hosting a firm, and she ends up hiring later in years, in her later years. And that's great, because as we saw from the unemployment numbers, the only person in the country who's hiring right now is Julia.
Yeah, that's exactly right, who doesn't exist. The other thing that a lot of people pointed out is, how is it that Obama's president her entire life? And and one of my favorites is that all of a sudden, the story stops at age 67, and I think it was one of the conservative senior organizations that said that's because she died waiting months for routine medical care. So
No. You know, you have to click on the last slide, Greg. It says in that one, the death panels catch up with her. At some point, Julia, you have to stop running.
Exactly. And as you told me yesterday, the RNC will probably be out with a video shortly with a lot of people named Julia who are not voting for Barack Obama. But we'll see what they come up with. Jim, have a great weekend. We'll talk to you Monday.
Looking forward to it, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us again on Monday for the next edition of the 3 Martini Lunch.